right, Adam, thanks. Just to go over again, the school board had a couple of elementary schools in hold and secure, but the kids were let out on time. Staff and students all left the building on time. They're still searching, as mentioned, in the Clayton Park area in Willett Street, where they made an arrest of three people. The nature of those threats, the allegations haven't really been made public, so we really don't know a whole lot about what it was they were intending to do or saying, or whatever claims they were making, and at what point police will release that to us. We will certainly pass it along as soon as we have that information to share with you. Welcome back to the program. It is almost 4:08 on this Tuesday afternoon, the 3rd of March, thankfully. A little bit closer to spring, maybe, hopefully. Earlier today, rather surprising, the Premier of the province made a statement to the media, to you effectively, saying the provincial government, the four unions representing healthcare employees, have agreed to a process to determine bargaining unit structures. As you may or may not be aware, this afternoon, the Premier was away. He was out of the country on, I don't know if it was a vacation, some time away. Last week, when all of this discussion erupted about the firing of the mediator and how the whole healthcare realignment of the bargaining units came crashing down. And today, the Premier says, given the sensitivity and importance of these discussions, the provincial government will reserve further comment until they are concluded. Also, from the media release from the Nova Scotia Federation of Labour, leaders of four healthcare units representing district health authorities, the IWK, are working with government on a new option for representation of those employees after the provincial health authorities established on the 1st of April. And they've all agreed to a media blackout as well. Joining us here on the program is Joan Jessam of the Nova Scotia Government Employees Union. And Joan, can you tell us why there's a blackout in place in this particular instance, when after all that we've been through over the last several months, that there's been so much discussion, so much of it has been public?
Well, I think you kind of answered your own question there, Sheldon. A blackout means that we cannot release any details. And all I can say, because I know our members and the public have been very interested in the story, all I can say is when there's communication going on, it's always a good thing.
That said, this blackout, I assume, also applies to your members. Are you able to tell them what's going on?
No, I'm not able to give them any details, other than to say that at the request of the Premier, we've been called into talks with all four unions, and those talks are ongoing.
Okay. And I won't press you to tip your hand in any way, but you said as long as there's talks, as long as there's talking, that's a good thing. So I should be at least somewhat optimistic by your optimism.
Yes, I think that's a fair statement.
Okay, fair enough. One of the discussions we had last night on the program was with Carla McFarland. She's the Pecto East MLA for the Conservatives. She's quite concerned hearing that the Visitor Information Centre in her riding has been, the announcement came that the government was going to close it. There was also another one in Digby, Visitor Information Centre, that was being closed. They're also switching campgrounds to self-serve. The NSGEU today released a statement saying it's a major step backwards. By that, what do you mean?
Well, I believe it is a major step backwards when you lay out 58 Nova Scotians that are seasonal employees, work in the industry, whether they're employees of the Department of Natural Resources or whether they're working in tourism in the VI Visitor Information Centres. At the same time, they are seasonal employees. They contribute in large part to the success of tourism in this province. They know more about the communities they work in and the parks they work in and surrounding areas than any of us would ever know. So replacing the parks people to put in a machine doesn't do one-eighth of the job that the people that they're laying off do, because it's not just somebody working at the entrance to a park and taking your money and registering you into a parking to a campsite. It's actually people that they do the maintenance on all of the equipment, they do the maintenance, they do the cleaning of the toilets, and if there's shower stalls. They also do all of the groundwork. They direct people to areas in the community. They are security. They make sure there's a fire ban on, that people don't have campfires burning. People are drinking. People have dogs off the leash. There's all kinds of work that makes up a park attendant, not just somebody standing at the entrance to a park collecting money. And they cannot be replaced by machines. And I would be quite confident in saying that the experience of the public from all over the world going into our campsites in this province, especially the ones that have been hurt by pretty significant layoffs, that their experience will not be the same, will not be as positive.
You know, I've seen the media in Pictou County representing this as, look at what we're losing because of the ferry. Some people are drawing a direct correlation between how much government is spending on the ferry in Yarmouth and the decision to close down the Visitor Information Center in Pictou. Have you heard those concerns?
I've certainly heard those comments, but I see no reason to shut down a Visitor Information Center in Digby when you've got the St. John Ferry coming and bringing people from all over Canada and the States into Digby area. We want the people that have the experience, that have the knowledge of what's available, what's not available, to talk about our province with such pride. We want them to be the first responders, in a sense. And the same thing in Pictou, when you've got people coming in from PEI or actually leaving the province, going to PEI, they do work a dual purpose. And those you can't replace those workers by Googling it. You can't get the personal experience. You can't get, you know, what's the best place to go, where the best place to have fish and chips, all the things that tourists rely on, the experience of these workers. That disappears when you close down those visitor information centers. And when you reduce people in the parks, it's the same impact. The other thing is that these workers are seasonal workers. Many of them will not qualify for any kind of a severance or anything from government. They work in very rural areas. They're not able to find work, you know, within their jurisdiction. They rely on EI for a portion of their income through the year. That disappears too. And I can't believe that government will make decisions to save $1 million. And I would argue that they will not save anywhere near that, because they're telling us now that registration will be down 25% by going to this model. And so they're going to lay people off and take away their full year income for people that have worked, many of them, as casuals, long before they were unionized, making hardly anything, with no benefits of any kind, taking them and putting them technically back on the welfare line, because there's no work in many of these areas in the targeted VICs and the targeted parks.
You know, Joan, there are people who are listening right now who say, but we've got a $15 billion debt. We are $300 million plus in the hole. Don't we have to make cuts somewhere?
So, you know, and we're going to make a dent on that debt by laying off people that work 4 to 6 months a year. I mean, I think that's really starting at the most vulnerable of their employees. And tourism is a huge industry in this province. We shouldn't be doing anything to hamper it. We need the people that have the experience that will promote this province from within. I mean, the parks, the Department of Natural Resources, have contracted a company out of Ontario to do park registration. These are jobs in Ontario. Why they lay off Nova Scotians? I think the priorities are wrong. There's ways to save money. I'm not arguing about the debt or we need to do things about it. They've already said they're only going to replace every second worker that leaves. So, I mean, they're doing things. They're talking about wage restraint. I think we haven't seen the tip of what they intend to do, the civil servants in the province. But laying off people that are seasonal 4 to 6 months of the year, closing parks or reducing services in parks, putting issues of security, the security of campers at risk. I think those decisions weren't the right ones to make.
Would this bitter pill be easier to swallow if Stephen McNeil announced that government was going to roll back their wages and cabinet was going to take a pay cut?
Well, I don't think that we're going to see the days of Savage when wages were rolled back or frozen for decades. I don't think that's what this government is intending. I don't think we're going to get off easy by any means, but I certainly don't think they're coming after rolling people's wages back. They're pretty upset about the increases we've received in the last 3 years, but I think when you look at a public sector worker's increase, you've got to look over more than one round of bargaining. But I think what the government, when you want to take away people that are at the lowest, most of them at the lowest pay rate in the civil service, they work 4 to 6 months. Many of them don't qualify for any benefits. They don't qualify for any of the, a lot of them don't qualify for the job security. And they are living in very rural areas around the province where these parks are located, where there isn't any other jobs. And they rely on EI to supplement their income for a portion of the year. To attack those workers and close visitor information centers, where I've actually been, I've visited them, and I know the importance of the questions that the public asks for, and that this is the public around the world. I mean, we're talking to some folks today in Porter's Lake, which is a park of 10 employees, Six of them are being laid off just on the outskirts of Halifax, or Dartmouth. They have people from all over the world. They told me all kinds of incidents with, you know, where they've had to deal with issues of dogs off leash or deal with issues of, you know, damage and vandalism and alcohol. Those are things that are real in our parks. You can't take that experience, and no machine at the entrance to a park is going to do anything about the security of the campers or the quality of the campsite.
All right, Joan. Thank you for this, and look forward to hearing what you can tell us when there's something to be told about the healthcare unions and the province. Thanks.
I will, as soon as we're able to speak, then we certainly will be communicating.
All right. All the best to you.
Thanks, Sheldon.
Safe travels.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That is Joan Jessam, the president of Nova Scotia Government and General Employees Union. Nova Scotia Government and General Employees Union. There is a media blackout in regards to what was discussed earlier this morning by the premier, saying that they have taken on talks with healthcare unions, and none of the four unions nor the province is willing to say a whole lot more right now. All right, 4:18. Are you a fan of the Rain Men? Are you a fan of basketball? Well, there was one playoff game last night, another one tonight, and I know there's a huge cheerleader in the man called Don Mills. He's been on social media today trying to get people out to support what he says is a fantastic, world-class product. Now or never for fans to come out to support the Halifax Rainmen. We're going to talk with Don Mills when we come back. All right, at 4:22, up to last night, Halifax Rainmen were on a 10-game win streak. Last night, well, it kind of came off the rails. But what is more important is the team owner saying, with only 400 fans turning up for their first playoff game, this is a bleak future. In fact, earlier this afternoon, we had noticed that many people were on social media trying to, you know, get us in the now or never mindset, and truly to tell you why it is now or never, we've reached out this afternoon to Don Mills. And Don, how long have you been a Rainmen fan?
Well, interesting enough, you know, I'm not actually a big basketball fan, Sheldon, but I am a big fan of Andre Livingston and what he's trying to do for the city, which is to bring professional basketball to a city to add to the vibrancy of the city and provide it with, another opportunity for good entertainment. And so, you know, I've been involved with Andre and a bunch of other business people to help guide him, hopefully to a better future for the last year or so. And, there's no question that the team has not been able to attract the kind of fan support that it needs. And, last night was a good example to have 400 fans out for a team that won 10 in a row, won their division, had their coach chosen coach of the year is a little baffling to say the least.
You know, we've asked this question and I've been in the city and talking media for a while. And why aren't they getting the credit? Why aren't people engaged by this league? Why is it that they are empty seats every night?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. I mean, this is a professional basketball team. It's a notch below the NBA. In fact, there are a couple players on the Rainmen, I think, that are NBA caliber players, like Young, for instance, is probably the best player that I've seen play basketball in the city, and a very exciting athletic individual. So it's not the quality of the game, I don't think. I'm not sure that, you know, we purport to be a basketball-supporting city, but I'm not really sure that that is the case, obviously, based on the support for this team. And you have to give credit to Andre Livingston. He's, you know, supported the team out of his pocket for 8 years and trying to build a long-term relationship with the city. He's very active in the community with his team, doing everything possible to engage young people in the game of basketball and bring, you know, role models to those kids to see and learn about the game. And he's really not getting a whole lot of return for all his efforts, frankly.
The team has had its challenges over the last number of years. The league has had, you know, its challenges. I guess other than, you know, this campaign to try and say, listen, if you want to see basketball in the city, you got to go to the games. Otherwise, it's just not going to survive. What more can we do?
Well, I don't know. I think, you know, people need to be made aware that that there needs to be a demonstration of support through the playoffs. You know, I think there's a chance that the team might not make it through the playoffs because of, you know, the sort of the cash demands on the business. If it's not supported at the gate, where is he going to get the money to, you know, to continue the team? So it's dire in that regard. Now, the good news is this, is that if the team were to get through this season, and that's a question mark at this moment, then there's an opportunity to restructure the team, recapitalize it, and try to put together a better plan to engage the public in supporting the team. But it's got to survive the playoffs, and right now that's a question mark, frankly.
All right, Don. Game tonight, 7 o'clock. It's Moncton Miracles and Halifax Rainmen, I guess.
We'll, great game last night, by the way. It's like really exciting, right down to the last shot. I mean, it couldn't be any more exciting.
111-110 sounded like it was a barn burner.
It was, yeah.
All right, all right,
have
Don.
Have you been to a game?
You know what? And I hate to admit it, but no, I have not.
Well, why don't you go out tonight? What are you doing?
That sounds like a great plan. What time are you picking me up?
I'll see you at the game. I'll be right there.
Okay, Don. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Don Mills. And I've got friends who are actively involved with the team. And, you know, it is a great sport, and it's a great team and a great game. And hopefully they get some great support. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a number of our Canadian soldiers who left this country today to head overseas. We'll tell you what that's all about. Hey, 4:35, three people under arrest, and we'll be following that the story throughout the afternoon after, the Micmac Mall was shut down for the day. We were told earlier some kind of threat was, sent their way. Still waiting for more details on that. What it all will mean, well, we'll find out and tell you as soon as we can. I had a tweet earlier today from someone saying, Cedar between Roby and Vernon tonight. Snow removal, night snow removal. Now, I don't know if this is actually a picture from today. If it is, that's a great idea. The chance that you'll know there will be snow removal. The overnight parking ban is in effect. Yes, today, perhaps. Snow removal, it is. So that said, you know, even if they don't have the snow ban or the parking ban in place, if you're parked there and they're trying to remove snow, you can get a ticket. We talked about this on the show yesterday. Thanks for tuning us in. Thanks for logging into News 95.7 this afternoon. Sheldon McLeod talking the afternoons. And we'll be speaking with Alan McMaster coming up in about 10 minutes' time. He's the MLA from Cape Breton who says, good. That Fenwick McIntosh is finally behind bars. We'll talk about that. We'll be talking with Grant Frost, the man behind Frosted Education, about PD days and storm days. There have been a lot of discussions whether we need to make up some of these many, many snow days we've had this year by sending kids to school on Saturdays or maybe into March break. I think the minister's pretty much poo-pooed the idea of putting kids in school over March break, but there is probably a good reason for us to have this conversation. Talk a little bit about cyberbullying on the show. It's a topic we've taken on before, and apparently there are still businesses who are using the act to keep people from complaining about them, even after they fire people who complained that they were being poisoned. And we're going to talk about the inaugural typobathymetric LIDAR field mission. I don't know what it is either, but that's what Tim Webster will tell us about with NSCC. Right now on the show, though, we're going to turn our attention to Canadian soldiers leaving for Operation Reassurance in Eastern and Central Europe. There were 125 soldiers from the 3rd Battalion, the Royal Canadian Regiment, 3RCR, who left CFB Trenton for Eastern Europe, all part of military activities undertaken by the Canadian Armed Forces in support of NATO. Sending us some more details on this, we're heading across the country. Member of Parliament for Selkirk, Interlake, is joining us here on the phone, and we say good afternoon to James Bezan or Bezan, sir?
Bezan.
James Bezan, Parliamentary Secretary to the Defence Minister. The soldiers today, they were sent off, and what is the nature of the mission that they're on?
So they are joining other Canadian troops that are already there, along with other operations that we've undertaken as a NATO member. So the company of soldiers from 3RCR are going to be stationed initially out of northern Poland, but then we'll be on exercises with other NATO allies in support of NATO countries that were former Soviet states, who of course are very anxious with the aggression that we're seeing by the Putin regime in Ukraine, but also what we've witnessed in the Baltic states. When we had our CF-18s flying Baltic policing and over the Baltic Sea, we encountered numerous times not only Russian military bomber aircraft and reconnaissance aircraft, but we also encountered Russian fighter jets. So it is definitely an escalation of posturing by the Russian Federation, but we will continue to stand with our NATO allies, along with reaching out to our friends in Ukraine as they deal with a very tragic battle that they're fighting with Russian proxies under the direction of the Kremlin in eastern Ukraine. The UN Human Rights Council just yesterday said that the death toll in eastern Ukraine now has gone over 6,000 people.
You know, I'm reading some information here that Operation Reassurance is being described as an exercise. Is that the fair way to characterize this, given that there are increased tensions in the area? And we've seen, the assassination of the Russian opposition leader in the last few weeks, or the last week?
Yeah, what happened Friday to Boris Nemtsov was tragic, and one that we all express our condolences. It was not only a major blow to the Russian opposition, but it is really sets democracy back in Russia quite dramatically. So, we are calling for an open and independent investigation, one that's removed from President Putin and the Kremlin, but Putin has said that he is going to lead this investigation. I guess as a former KGB officer, he feels he's qualified. But first thing I think comes to most people's minds is, if you want to do a cover-up, you want to do it right, you might as well take the lead on it, and maybe that's what Putin is all about right now. But I can tell you that NATO Reassurance mission with Canadian participation from all segments of our armed forces, the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy, are about improving our interoperability and training with our NATO allies that we haven't traditionally might have trained with in the past, like Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, Latvia. These are countries that we haven't normally carried a lot of military exercises with, but now that we seem to be moving into a new world order of Russia trying to redraw the map at the whim of President Putin, it is important that we have these very strong linkages with our allies in Eastern Europe.
125 soldiers, as mentioned, 3rd Battalion, RCR. These men and women are not expected to be put in any kind of a combat role in this particular exercise?
Not at all. Right. This is about beefing up NATO's military presence in Eastern Europe to send a strong message to Russia that they're not welcome, and trying to reclaim former Soviet states that are now members of NATO. It's unfortunate that Ukraine had not attained membership in the past. Part of that is due to President Yanukovych, the former president of Ukraine, who resisted that path and was busy bankrupting the country and robbing the cupboards bare. But essentially, that's the difference between what we're doing in Poland and the Baltic states versus what's happening in Ukraine. But we are helping Ukraine. We are providing non-lethal military equipment. We are providing satellite images now from RadarSat 2 to the Ukrainian military so they can track Russian troop movements in their territory. And we have provided over $530 million of aid to help stimulate their economy, help stabilize their departments, and we are providing military training to their police and to their leadership here in Canada, and have signed on to the United States Ukraine-Canada Joint Commission on Military Reform and Cooperation.
All right. The send-off today, was the Prime Minister able to make it?
I don't believe he did, but I know that all of us are very proud of our men and women in uniform who are always prepared to step up and serve our nation so bravely, and know that they'll be operating in some new circumstances and with some new friends, but we know that long-term that this is in the best interest of our Western alliance through NATO.
Do we know when these soldiers will be returning home?
It's a 3-month deployment at this point in time,
okay.
And so they'll be there through the spring, and we'll look at all sorts of opportunities for training with our NATO allies, including the United States, who will be there. And of course, there is talk within NATO of again going back in time somewhat, but reestablishing some bases in Eastern Europe, so that there is a more robust military presence in the event of an unpredictable decision made by the Kremlin and by President Putin to do something foolish.
All right. Well, thank you for being available to us on the program this afternoon, and appreciate your time.
Anytime, Phil. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Cheers. That is the Parliamentary Secretary to Jason Kenney, the Minister of National Defense, our guest that we were just speaking with, James Bizan, calling in to tell us about what happened today with soldiers leaving the Trenton Air Force Base for overseas to Eastern and Central Europe. It's 4:34. A story we heard about over the weekend, in fact. Well, someone who has been in our news for a number of weeks. We told you about the charges that had been laid against Fenwick McIntosh. Well, apparently he has not only been convicted, but sentenced. Justice moves very swiftly, apparently, in Nepal. We'll be joined in just a few seconds for a bit of an oversight, an overlook at this. Progressive Conservative MLA for Inverness will be our guest. Also, Justice Critic. He is also the Justice Critic. Alan McMaster. Stick around for that. All right, 4:47, Fenwick McIntosh jailed in Nepal for 7 years. Coming up in just a second, the justice critic for the Conservatives, Alan McMaster, will join us to tell us why he is grateful that McIntosh is finally behind bars. But just quickly wanted to take this call from Pat. Pat, how are you?
Your last guess, Sheldon, is that was total unadulterated propaganda from our federal government.
They are sending soldiers from Canada to Eastern Europe as part of a NATO exercise. So what part of that was propaganda?
Okay, so what they're saying was this opposition leader to Putin,
mm-hmm.
Okay, was assassinated. Yes, he was.
Yep.
Now, this guy was, this opposition leader was totally funded, okay, by Western alliances, okay? There's all kinds of weird stuff going on there. That guy was totally funded by the West. So what do you think is happening there?
I really have no idea, other than Putin said, well, nobody showed up at his funeral, so, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I'll say, well, I know the difference, and I know military people, okay? So there's all kinds of, we're not getting the truth.
Oh, I agree. There are many stories we're not getting the truth on, Pat. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. We can take on that issue. I don't tend to follow international politics because the stuff that happens locally is far more interesting to me. Although we will head overseas. And in Kathmandu, we heard about a complaint that was lodged against a former Nova Scotia resident. And I guess he currently is still considered a resident. But a former businessman who was, for the most part, convicted of abusing boys in the Strait area. That conviction was overturned because, well, somebody renewed his passport. That's pretty much the story here. Alan McMaster is the justice critic for the Conservatives. He's also the MLA for Inverness. And Mr. McMaster, why is it that you're grateful that Fenwick McIntosh is finally behind bars?
I'm grateful because we couldn't do it here in Canada. It lasted 15 years, and McIntosh over that time was off in other parts of the world. In India, there were reports, and of course, most recently in Nepal, where he's just been convicted. And what took 15 years here and produced nothing took 48 days in Nepal and produced a conviction and a jail sentence of 7 years and a restitution payment of about $7,500 Canadian, which would equate to a lot more in terms of for people and for this boy in Nepal.
You know, we've spoken with Bob Martin, and you praise his efforts and the fact I wasn't aware that he'd actually done a whole lot of homework and sent a whole lot of information over to the prosecution over there just to make sure they knew, and in his words, what kind of a monster they had been able to capture.
Yes, and I believe it actually had some impact, and I'm sure it gave confidence to the prosecution and the police in Nepal to know that, you know, they really, I'm sure it motivated them to put this McIntosh behind bars, and I'm sure they're seeing enough of that in their country. I know Nepal is targeted by some of these pedophiles because historically their laws have not been strong against pedophiles abusing children there. So I'm sure they're seeing this day in and day out. And when they heard they had a somebody of the with the reputation that McIntosh had, I think they rushed to try to bring it before the court, and the court saw fit to send him to prison.
You know, I still find it absolutely fascinating that people are trying to be careful, you know, talking about Fenwick McIntosh, because on appeal, you know, he was given a chance to walk out of prison because it took too long to get him behind bars and to get him into custody and face justice. And there's been some talk, suggestion, that we need to have an inquiry into how the system failed. Do you think?
Well, at very least, we need, and not just, you know, it's one thing for people in politics like myself to talk about it, but we need people who are working in the justice system day in and day out to take responsibility. I'll give you one example. The lawyer who represented the government of Canada years ago, after the government had taken away McIntosh's passport, he filed the matter legally with his legal people, and the lawyer that represented the Canadian government, there was no record of any discussion, no details about what was discussed. He was given back his passport and his license to go on abusing children elsewhere outside of the country. And I remember I picked up the phone and I called her. I just wanted to hear what she would have to say.
And what did she say?
She wouldn't talk to me at all. She didn't want to talk to me at all, and she spent very little time getting off the phone with me. But, you know, that's what needs to change. And I know people are innocent until proven guilty, but people who are working in the justice system, if they are going to come home at night and feel they've done a good day's work, they need to make sure that they are acting in the interests of the people of our society, and in this case, children.
You know, it was kind of scary is, yeah, absolutely, there is process, and yeah, we need to respect that, but Bob Martin and others have said they've carried this for their life, and now they're taking some small solace in knowing not only did Fenwick McIntosh fight against being in prison here in Canada, he's found himself in a whole different situation, and life for Mr. McIntosh is going to be a whole lot different now than it would have been had he been imprisoned here.
Well, I think you're right. From everything we hear, the prisons of Nepal, there's a great mixing of the prison population. It doesn't really matter what you've done. Everybody's all in there together, and I have no doubt there's probably some men in the prison there who may have been abused in their own childhood. And once they hear about McIntosh and what he's done, they may choose to take that out on him. And I don't know, perhaps the Lord works in mysterious ways. I don't want to sound vengeful, but when you look at how many times he got away with what he did and all the people who he abused thereafter when he got away with what he did back in the 70s. Again, I don't like to sound vengeful, but it's hard for me to feel sorry for him.
You're not worried that by, you know, claiming that he's serial, as we've heard people allege, you know, that there have been many young men and older men who have accused this man of this. You know, he was acquitted here in Canada. You're not worried he's going to come back and sue Alan McMaster?
I don't care, to be honest. I think he's, in fact, I'm trying to change the law so that other people can sue him. And we were trying to do that, as I know you had us on your show here not so long ago talking about that. And the spring legislative session is coming up at the end of the month. And, of course, top of my agenda is to get the government to pass an amendment to their Limitations Act that would allow historic victims of abuse to be able to sue the person who abused them. And certainly in McIntosh's case, given that the criminal court of justice failed to put him behind bars, this would allow the civil court and people to sue him in the civil court and limit his ability to travel to places like Nepal. But let's hope that he, in his case, is behind bars till the end of his days.
Amen. Alan McMaster, thank you.
Thank you, Sheldon.
All right. The best. Alan McMaster, Justice Critic for the Progressive Conservatives, also the MLA for Inverness. 4:55. We'll be shuffling off to the newsroom here for a few seconds. Just had someone had tweeted a picture of a sign saying they were going to do street cleaning. Someone had asked, why are they putting these up if we know that the parking ban's in place tonight? Joanne, here's the thing. It could be 10 o'clock at night if the plow's coming through. They can give you a ticket under provincial law for blocking snow removal equipment. I think it's a great idea. They should be doing this more often, giving people in the neighborhoods a heads up on that.